in two parts. First, now the principles, and then separately, the practice. I want to do a presentation first about the principles of healing meditation, because there are so many forms of healing meditation, and so many variations on it, and all of them have different explanations behind them. But when you look in the body, then it doesn't seem to me much ground for the explanations are given. So even though they seem to work, they don't seem to work for the reasons that are given, and in many cases they don't work well enough, such as in cases where people have cancer and something actually really needs to be sorted out on the inside, but then it turns out that people can't do it for the simple reason that they don't know how to get to the level where the correction is needed. Just to give two examples of that, Simonton and Simonton were doing research on cancer patients and leukemia patient children, and they discovered that if they had the children do visualizations of a, at that time invoked Pac-Man kind of game, chasing the bad molecules in the body, making drawings of it, that in the disease programs they could see that there was a change and that the immune system of the body was actually kicking in. So there was definitely something that was taking place which was already known from hypnosis, which is of course also connected to yoga techniques, that it is possible to go to a different level of consciousness and then to establish a different kind of connection to the body, the organ, the cell communication, as a result of which whatever went wrong in the body at that level can be corrected. Evidently is there a problem with that, because whatever was right already went wrong without anybody noticing, which means that in that what was happening there was no monitoring at the level where the problems were actually manifesting themselves in the body. And that's also something which is found in hypnosis, that yes, it is possible to very explicitly and very directly have people change their physiology. So yes, they can blush, yes, they can go red, or white, they can have patches on their skin go up by just by somebody pointed at, touching at it and suggesting that something will happen there. And so within our body we have a capacity to interact from the mind to the body very directly, but also very indirectly. That's very directly because you see the response in the body, but very indirectly it is a hypnotist on the outside who guides the process. But in some of the situations of the disease, the hypnotist doesn't actually know which process it is, doesn't know where it is, doesn't know at which level it is, so then there is no direct possibility to zoom in or to edit it. And nowadays you would say that with applied kinesiology, there are techniques that you can actually use a body dowsing technique to delve into the body archives and selectively go through the layers of consciousness and the layers of body hierarchies, so that you can connect up to the part of the body and the process in the body, so that you can interact with them and balance them out again. And applied kinesiology does that in detail and in very many ways, but yet sometimes for some of the diseases that doesn't seem to work in that manner. One of the reasons that it doesn't work, because sometimes diseases are not as they are imagined. And one of the arguments which I always have when people present their theories about remedies and why they work, that it doesn't matter if the teacher understands it. It doesn't even matter if the pupil, the apprentice doctor, understands it, it doesn't even matter if the patient who is sick understands it. What really matters is if the body understands it. And so that's also where I've come up with this notion that we need to understand body language. Body language is not that somebody mimics something or changes posture or stands something. And all these books about sexual signaling, subliminal communication in body posturing is not what I consider body language. For me, body language is the language of the body. It's the language by which cell communicates, the thoughts in which cell interact with each other, and the thought and consciousness by which cells take their decisions. And so I've come to quite different appreciation and understanding of that. And at the core of that, I would now simply say that the body language is an electromagnetic communication field in which the cells stand central, because they are the actual agents in the body. We can look at the body anatomy, but we must always realize that the bones and the connective tissues and cartilages, all of that has been produced by body cells for a specific purpose. But now, simply in your mind, take away all of those body materials that make up the body that has been produced by all of these living cells, and then you see a colony of living cells who together have created this wonderful structure and live in this wonderful structure. But they are actually the people living there, and it is their work that created it, it is their work that maintains it. And if there is something amiss in the body anatomy, then it doesn't help if you go to a medical doctor and say, well, this is the anatomy, let's cut and paste a bit and get the thread and needle a bit and fix it, because there is a reason why it went in a different way, and that reason is always because the physiology of the body changed. But the physiology is again the communication of the cells by the materials that they use. It is the letters and the bottom mail by which they interact with each other. So in essence, you can take that away too, because that is mainly the communication medium. What you're looking for is where the disease originated, and that's the cell somehow decided to make more or less of something, and there's always a reason for that. And sometimes the reason might be that there is a lack of food or a lack of something else, but that line of thinking falls apart a bit when you are aware that there are quite a number of people who don't eat at all. So they don't take in food, so they don't have the materials for the food, they don't use the food for the energy. Evidently they use something else for the energy. Actually, they're not using something else for the energy, the cells are using something else for the energy. And what I've described apart separately earlier is that the cells actually are in direct contact with the quantum field, and they can interact with the quantum field, they can use the quantum field, and they work with the quantum field to do the things that they do. So the quantum field is actually the information source and the energy source, and the rest is just the material that they play with. But the people who don't eat, they just recycle the materials, and they so well that they can maintain their body perfectly well on that. I met a couple of those people, and they just simply don't eat. As one of them said, wonderful, I don't have to do the shopping, I don't have to do preparing and cooking, I don't have to set the table, do the eating, I don't have to do the washing up, I can just do research. And with that perspective, we can then see that the cells themselves are operating this cosmic consciousness and nuclear energy, and that the body language of the cells exists at that level. That's also something which I came to conclude in had the research that has been done on cancer. When I look at the description, I believe very little of it, and I was happily supported in that thought, or triggered in that thought, by meeting Charles Rowlatt, researcher of the Imperial Cancer Research Fund in London, who had been looking through the electron microscope, and basically had the best available, and he was seeing that something was amiss in the research on cancer, which is where at some point they thanked him for being there, because one of the things he realized is that every time a new technology was brought in, they said, you see, now we can show what cancer is and where it comes from. And then after a while that didn't work out, and a new technology came in and said, you see, we told you so, we're going to show you. But in his finding, he discovered that cancer cells can move right through other cells without any traces, and that there are specific logical relationship where some cells will grow ad infinitum and others will not. Actually, the ones that keep on growing are parts of cells which are encapsulated, so the capsule will normally contain them, so they cannot do that themselves. And the self-limiting kind of cancerous growth are cells which are part of that encapsulating system, so they already are self-contained in how they grow. So there was a lot more that he described, and some of the other crucial information I found, which for me is very indicative for this understanding of body language, is that in medical school there was this expose on the cell cycle, and then basically it was said, and then there is this fourth sector, the pause phase, and basically it's there. For me, with my background in engineering and cybernetics and system theory, it was evident that the pause phase is actually the key for the whole cycle. Because the pause phase, why would you have a pause phase in a system unless you need to pause for something? If you're pausing for something, you're waiting for something. If you're waiting for something, there is a connection. You're waiting for a pulse or an impulse across the connection. So there is a sensitivity, which means that there is a communication taking place. But if that communication does not take place, what happens then? And there has been some very impressive and nifty research on these kind of biological feedback cycles. I'm trying to remember the precise timing on it. I think it was a mosquito, and I think that the normal time cycle for the reset of the system of that specific organism was 10 hours. And it was based on the expectation that the normal daylight time in that region would be 12. So that there would always be a reset for the light to reactivate a specific circuitry in that organism after 12 hours. So they put the organism in the dark and gave it a light flash after 13 hours. As a result of which, the whole system, which had that as its extreme setting, was brought to a catastrophe. It went totally chaotic because it was triggered at its triggery critical timing setting. And that is the importance of these pause phases. That's where the system actually needs to synchronize what it's doing to what's happening around. And then that evidently is not taking place in cancer. And as I've described elsewhere, I'll just summarize it here. The picture that I've come to now is that the cells communicate. They have this pause phase, and in the pause phase they need to get the synchronization pulse. Normally they will get it, but there are a couple reasons why they would not get it. One of the reasons is that the environment of the cell is hyperacidic, which means that there's too many electrons flowing around, which is like chaotic heat, and that interferes like a hiss on the radio, making too much noise, you cannot hear the music anymore. The second part is that in the body there is a trauma, and the trauma is stored in a kind of eddy current which runs around, and to store the memory requires activity and energy of the cells, but it thereby interferes with the other cell activities. And as Rieke Geert Hamer showed, the specific kind of separation trauma or conflict trauma that people have are processed in the body at different centers, for the simple reason that every organ participates in a different kind of relationship between inside and outside, forward, back, input, output, active, passive, and so on. So depending on the kind of conflict, one organ will need to deal it, will need to store it, will need to digest it, but it cannot digest it. So the organ keeps on busy trying to digest it. In the past you would call it the do loop in a computer. The cells in that area have this eddy current going around, and they cannot, they're sort of being overshadowed by, remember this was horrible, you remember this, how horrible it was, this was, remember this, and so on. But it's not being resolved. And as Rieke Geert Hamer, so at the moment that you resolve that old trauma, the cells can ungrow their cancer. So the third level of cancer seems to be indicated by homeopathy, by the remedy of carcinosin. And carcinosin is the remedy which is given to people who let others determine too much what their life should be. That's basically they had the dominant mother or a father figure who is still in a way silently ruling their life. In this case, everybody is sort of allowed to tell them what to do. And they've gone subservient to basically anybody or everybody. But as a result, their body doesn't know who it's working for. So it switches polarity up and down, and the cells, basically they don't know who's who anymore. That's one of the forms of identity disease. And so then the cells too are in a undecidedness of who they're working for or what they are. The removal of cancer, one of my friends has been working with this, was always to get the identity back in place, to get the trauma out of the system, to get the acidity out of the body. And he also eradicated viral organisms because they often thrive in these kind of eddy currents within the body. And he showed me pictures of how cancers then ungrow. I'm relating to this, I'm talking about this now, because I'm trying to help you understand that I really needed to shift my understanding of what body language is, and I really needed to come to an understanding that body language is the cell communication, and that the cell communication in that sense is very precise and very accurate. But let's call it, it's electromagnetic, and it is coded in four dimensions. So it's not surprising that with people have say specific techniques for visualization or breathing or other, that these all work very well, but that they cannot make them precise, or that they can use hypnotic suggestions and make them very precise, but that they lack the power or can't pick up the speed to undo the problem in time. And that's also one of the reasons that I started on this whole project of Mathemusics, to make clear that the body language is actually this cell communication, which is electromagnetic, which uses molecules and everything, which spans from the physical to the photonic of the whole spectrum. But it is also encoded in four-dimensional codes. So you need to have an understanding of, say, a computer, but now three-dimensional. It's not just a motherboard, but it is like our brain in three dimensions. so that essentially every slice to the brain, vertically, sideways, horizontally, forward and backward, it all has a different motherboard, and all of them interconnect, and all of them can cross-calculate, cross-compute, and they can calculate separately, they can combine, they can do the opposite, and so on. I learned a lot about the capacities, capabilities of hypnosis by working with people. I discovered that with a logical understanding of things and a clarity of the procedure and protocol that you're doing, you can very specifically go into the body-mind archives and can get to conflictuous information or other information. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you also can connect it to where the body can listen along on that. So that's where it's really clear that the head, the heart, the hara, and the holy bone are different processing levels, and that the human, the animal, the plant, and the cell in us work by a different logic, and that you really need to compute between them, and it's like taking somebody for a walk in a dark castle, and every now and then you take out a match and you have this flicker of the flame illuminating this large wonderful room, but what would be more practical than this kind of hypnosis guided tour in the palace of their own mind and their own dreams would be if people learn to do that themselves. So complementing the hypnosis, there is evidently the guided meditation, and as it turned out, very often in guided meditation people will already know where I would be going next. They would already see it before I mentioned it, so that's where you then realize that we are telepathically connected, and that the thoughts that we have already broadcast at light speed, and it's communicated in that way. But still, in looking at it from the outside, yes, sometimes it's possible to have glimpses or feelings or sensings of what people experience inside of them. There's some people who are more trained at it or have a bit of a different background and setting, so that they can see more of it or feel more of what the other experiences. For me, it's often that I feel what happens in the other, even perhaps more than they feel themselves. But in the guided meditation, I also realized that there would be parts where they would sort of self-protect themselves, and thus not go where they really needed to go. Sometimes there would be other ways to get to it. It's very easy to get around emotional levels by going below them and coming from under, so that the emotions play no role at all. They just have the experience, and they can look at it and say, oh, okay, yeah, I can let it go now. And then the charge can discharge. So there are all these techniques which you can work with. And from hypnosis to guided meditation, the next step, of course, is that people need to learn to do the meditation themselves. But there's some difficulty in that again, this problem of the blind spot or the black holes or the covered up memory dumps, the traumatic experiences which are locked in the body. Which is essentially like the description of purgatory. It's like a fridge and the door is locked and there's this flickering light, so do not open this door. That costs a lot of energy. So these purgatory spaces in the body, where this little hell enclave exists of do not look at me, are calling out all the time, but they're afraid to go there. So you actually need to go there, turn off the lights, and I say, well, this is actually just a door, and yes, it's cold in there, but it's frozen in there for a good reason, because you didn't know what to do with it. So the body just put it outside of time, but it couldn't get out of the body, so it stored it in the body. And in this way, you have all kinds of traumatic memories which are stored in the body. You can't get rid of them until you go and get them. And so sometimes, yes, you have to go into the basement, and you have to go and dive into the water where the turds float on top, because that's the only way to unclog the drain. And once you have unclogged it, then you can simply clean out the basement, and the whole palace will smell sweet as roses again. But in meditation, people, of course, they covered it up. So their self-defense is also their defense. So that's where these things then become self-sabotage elements, and you need to have a bypass for that. So that's where I was very glad that I ran into applied kinesiology, because with an applied kinesiology, you can go into the body memory from the side of the body. You can actually connect into the body memory. You can use the meridians, you can connect into the chakras, you can go into the metabolic system, you can locate the memory glitches where something got stuck, or where something got reversed, or something got locked out or locked in. And you will find that it's sort of in its little isolation cell, and all you then need to do is connect that isolation cell up to the cabling of the meridians. You say, okay, this is where it is now, and here we have the cord for the one meridian, for the other meridian, for the other meridian, and you reconnect it to the digestive system through the meridians, and the meridian system will then simply reconnect to it and digest it. There's a couple of techniques for that, and that sort of gets closer to that understanding of that with hypnosis you can get a red blotch to appear on the skin because you touch it, because the body then listens and know. But in the applied kinesiology, this kind of activity takes place, but it doesn't always have the emotional power or the emotional involvement. Because yes, it is the body responding, but the emotional body is often outside of the picture. And there are techniques, like shamanic techniques, there are a lot of these sensitivity training techniques, which, by the way, have been abused a lot to mind control people by shocking them through emotional states. And in those, in shamanic techniques, there are methods of confrontation and going into the actual recorded shock experience of the body, revoking that, activating it, and letting it shout itself out. The Janov shouting technique, primordial scream, is part of that. There are many different techniques. Shamanic drumming is part of it. Beating the body, body drumming is part of it. There have been people working with pulling the limbs up to the level of, say, crucial pain of the ligaments. As a result of it, the body will need to scream, and in the scream, all kind of old trauma is released as well. To me, those are a bit at the level of using a sledgehammer to repair an alarm clock. I think it's better to understand the body and connect to the body to help the body resolve the problems, because actually the body is trying to do its best in trying to maintain its integrity and to maintain your integrity while you're feeding it all these kind of problems which you don't resolve. And on hope that you go asleep and you wake up the next morning and everything is repaired. Well, some of these things cannot be repaired overnight. Actually, when you come back next night, you might have added more on top and it just doesn't work. So how is the body going to do it? So some people are aware of that sleeping doesn't do it anymore. So they add meditation to their daily diet. So they have artificial sleep. And at some point we will come back to the sleeplessness and how that plays along in our lives. So in the adding of the artificial sleep, they go through the whole sleep cycle without needing to be asleep. So as a result, they become conscious of what happens in the sleep cycle, but they also become conscious of what happens in the body. And so most of the healing techniques are variations to that theme, that you go into the body, go through the levels and expect all of it and feel all of it and interact with all of it, which is done with breathing and heartbeat and other attention techniques. And basically in all of these approaches, you combine four interests. You use the breathing as a focus. You have a target for the attention. Then you put a time clamp on it. So you stay in that area for a while. And then with your intent, you seek understanding, or you seek transformation. So for example, if somebody has pain in their shoulders, but they have the pain in their shoulders so long they don't even feel it anymore, the muscles in the shoulder have contracted so much that the blood flow is actually contracted for a very long time already, and so the sensory system has already been atrophied and starved a bit, so they no longer feel that they are cramped. So they essentially have these rocks of muscles next to their shoulders. They're not aware of it, and when they check their body, they don't even discover that there's a problem there. It's only at other moments that they say, there's some tingling in the finger, there's something not right. And then they start to focus on the body. And I'm just giving this example, it can be anywhere in the body or for any organ system, any specific thing. It's just a technique which matters here. So they focus on that area. And after a lot of training, and it might even take quite a while, they then realize that actually they're not feeling something there. It's only after they realize that they can go and look for why is it that I'm not feeling that here. Maybe they touch the area with the shoulder and discover, there's a rock there. So in that sense, the muscle which was cramped in a spasm, which got so stiff that it actually hurt until it became senseless, has become a blind spot in our system. And this principle exists in very many forms throughout the body. So once they then look into that area, then they find out one of those freezers that they open up. And then once they go into it, they start to thaw it out. And then suddenly all this pain comes out. Because that's like when you go out in the cold, it's freezing, you've been on the skates, you come back. And then you take off the skates, you come back in the warmth again, and you suddenly discover that your feet have gone numb because of lack of circulation. And then the circulation comes back in, the oxygenation comes back in, and all these star cells start to shout out, let's say for joy, oxygen, oxygen, happy, happy. And then the system slowly starts to revive again, starts to reboot. So with these rocks in the shoulder likewise, there will be the pain. People then will say, I'm doing something wrong, it's painful. No, pain is where the electrical system has got fizzled and locked in. So if there is essentially an electrical charge which is charged up there, there is a reason for that. Yes, you can discharge it with Novocaine, Procaine, and a neural therapy approach, but you can also find out what's going on there. Why is there electrical charge charged up there? What then is possible is that you focus your breathing on that area. And with the breathing, you visualize that the area is expanding, contracting, being nurtured by the breathing. And so with your mind, you connect to it, basically the same as what you do in the hypnotic techniques. So that part of the body is part of your focus of attention, plus you connect it to the rhythm of the breathing, which makes sure that you don't fall asleep on the job because you have something to do. And then by focusing that sensation of the breathing into that area, an awareness will start to reorient itself, because something that was locked out, the muscle essentially got blocked because there was a spasm, because there was something you doing while you were thinking something else. So your body needed to respond to what you were doing plus to what you were thinking. Apparently there was a conflict between two. It got sort of locked in place. The energy doesn't flow anymore, as they say in Chinese, the qi is blocked. So the information going to that part of the system is locked, and you need to unlock it by going back into what happened then and how can you get out of that. And one intriguing experience I had once was a guy who had fallen off a chair 10 years before. He'd been to all kinds of therapists, asked me to look along and said, well, what happened? And he said, I was sitting in the chair and fell, so I cannot imagine what it is. How did I go? I said, well, like this. Oh, no, show me. So he put himself on the chair and I had him go through the fall in about 12 minutes time, because every time his body started to shake and quake and shock and shiver, I stopped the motion until his body could settle. And then after the 12 or 20 minutes, I forget how long it was, he was lying on his back on the floor, pain-free. And it was simply because his body has locked that fall into his body but hadn't let go of it, because nobody looked at it. He hadn't looked at it. All of the other people hadn't looked at it. They hadn't asked him what had happened. So once his body could call up the memory of that experience, it fell in place, and as the body was in the same posture of that memory then, the body recognized it and knew what to do next. So the situation which got stuck could be unstuck. And by the way, homeopathy uses that technique a lot in a different way, by feeding the body information. So I'd like to bring this to a close by summarizing the whole core of what I'm describing here. The principle of healing meditation is simple. There are lots of techniques which are very effective. It just appears that there is not a good overview of why they work and how they work, and most often it is because the explanations are at the symptomatic or the symbolic level. It is about something that happens with the body or something that happens in the thought processes, but it doesn't actually connect to the body language of the body memories. And yes, there's this whole variety of different techniques, but it doesn't much seem to matter which ones you use. Quite a lot of them will have effect, but what seems to be lacking is the clever combination of different kinds of techniques, so that it is possible to put the one and the other together and switch from the one to the other at the right moment to really navigate to where it all happens, to immediately able to pull out this thing which got locked into the body, which the body doesn't know what to do with, and to resolve it so that the body can happily breathe again, communicate all between all the cells again, and can restore its whole pattern again. Because that essentially is what I have come to see, that in our body there's a natural process of things, but sometimes events get locked in to this the system. It's a bit as in the past you would have a cinema where the film broke and the last picture would be seen. And in that way, in the body there are a couple of those pictures which are sort of kept while the other movie camera just keeps on rolling. So you have this double image on certain situations where the body just gets confused. So to defuse it is by going back to what is the body normally doing without holding on to these other things. And that's where the sleep cycle is then the foundation of being able to restore the connectedness. And that's where the meridian system and the understanding of the organ system helps to see that it's all a metabolic cycle, where things go in, things are accepted, things are transformed, and things are released again. That principle works at the cellular level, the organ level, at the body level, social level. So in that way, through this kind of healing meditation, you can get healthy in your body, you can get peace in society. I'll leave it to everybody to who's listening to this to look into the details on, say, the electromagnetic depth of what happens in cells, because that is really necessary to realize that the body is not an object. Also to look into the cell consciousness and consciousness in general, because that is really important in building the bridge between mind and body. And for that purpose also, there's this other presentation on the psychosomatic, which we'll just briefly recapitulate. That in the body we have this information field, the cells interact with that, communicate through that, as a result they make their decision, which is the level of system regulation. By the decision they take, they go into a specific process that creates the physiology by which the body is built and maintained, and the result of that is the body anatomy, the result of the product of the molecules which have been put in place by the cells. So the cell is at the core of the psychosomatic experience, and so there is always a translation from the psyche to the body and from the body to the psyche. But at the balance point between them, you can see that it's all about living consciousness. And that is then the essence of the healing meditation, that there is a realization that within the body there's this natural process, going back on the experience of, say, 5 billion of years, which is maintained within the cells, because you got your first self from your living parents, who got their first self from their living parents. So your first cell has been living for billions of years already. And that's quite a feat. And in that cell there is all that knowledge and information, so it knows how to normally and naturally do things. And most of the diseases are the consequence that something interfered with that natural functioning. So as soon, as long as you can connect to the cell to that level of its normal functioning, and basically and that's the principle of Ho'oponopono. Sorry, forgive me, you can let it go, I love you. That the cell is allowed to let go of all the things that don't help you. As the biblical says, okay, let go of your burdens, because it just bothers them, it doesn't help. Get on with it. But you actually need to look at those burdens, or these shocks, or these horrors, or these traumatic experiences, which you don't look at because they were so scary that you put them under the carpet. That is the essence of the healing meditation, that you pull away the carpet, look under it, let go of whatever you find there, and realize that under the carpet everything is clean once you have cleaned it up. And then the body can do its own thing again, until you mess it up again, until you clean it up again.